Welcome to The Grow Show, brought to you by Marty Grunder's Grow Group, where we specialize in helping landscaping companies to clarify their platform, grow their people, build their processes, and realize profits. Everything we teach is grounded in real experience. Our team is actively involved in the day-to-day operations of Southwest Ohio's Grunder Landscaping Company. New episodes are released weekly on Wednesdays and are made possible with the support of Bob Yard. Remember to subscribe so you never miss an episode. Now here's your host, Marty Grunder.
Well, good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever the case may be. This is Marty Grunder from Grunder Landscaping Company and the Grow Group. Thanks for downloading the Grow Show. Today, we're going to talk to my friend, Andrew Bray. Andrew, give a wave. The Senior VP of Governmental Relations and Membership at the National Association of Landscape Professionals. We're going to talk about the very important H2B program. But first, a reminder. You can get the latest edition of The Grow Show delivered to your phone, tablet, or computer by subscribing wherever you get your podcasts or watch us on YouTube for an enhanced learning experience. The Grow Show is the greatest thing since the National Association of Landscape Professionals, or NALP as it's affectionately known, run by all-around nice guy Britt Wood. NALP is a great organization that if you're not a member of Landscape Pros, you need to be. No one, and I do mean no one, advocates for our industry better than NALP, and you're about to learn that here in a couple seconds. And then throw in the networking and learning and resources that NALP offers, and you need to join, folks. We'll have it all attached in the show notes. Once you're done listening to Andrew and we talk about the H2B program and you hear all the advocating this guy has done, you're going to want to join NALP. You can't sit back and complain, folks. You got to get involved. Now on to the Grow Show. So whether you currently use the H2B program, which we do, or you've considered it, or you just want to understand why so many landscape professionals rely on it, this episode is for you. Today we have Andrew Bray from NALP. Andrew spends a tremendous amount of time, folks, I know this firsthand, advocating for our industry in Washington, D.C. and beyond, and helping business owners understand what's happening with H2B and really any kind of governmental regulation or legislation that can get in the way or even help us. The government in some cases can help you, folks. Andrew's a part of that. Andrew, welcome to The Grow Show.
So glad to be here, Marty, and thank you so much for the plug for NALP and looking forward to a good conversation today.
Well, it's going to be fun. I just can't say enough good things about you. We wouldn't have this H2B program, ladies and gentlemen, at the state that it is if it weren't for Andrew. There are many listening, probably many on the H2B little ad hoc committee that you have together that I'm a part of. They understand what you've done. And I know you've had some help, but you have been a guiding light here, Andrew. And I thank you. Like, I'm giving you a hug through the screen here for what you've done. Because
it's a mutual hug, Marty.
Well, you're good. So tell us a little bit about yourself before we get started talking about H2B.
Sure. Yeah, no, thanks again for having me on. And, I've been working in the government relations space since 2003 when I graduated college. I am from the D.C. area, so I am a political junkie. It's a true passion of mine, Marty. And as I always tell people, I've worked for several industries over my 20-plus year career. But all the industries I represented before I came to the landscape industry were industries I didn't really have a relationship to, say pest management, the meat industry, the grocery store industry. I mean, I eat meat and I go to grocery stores, but I actually worked in the landscape industry in high school and college and even when I was going through law school. So I'm passionate about advocacy, but I'm also passionate about the landscape industry. And I really appreciate the great work that this industry does every day.
Well, it's obvious, Andrew, and you're also just a nice guy. I enjoy talking to you, and we have a lot in common in terms of our philosophies on business. Let's start with the basics here on H2B. For someone who hasn't heard of H2B, or maybe they have heard it, I think most people have probably heard it. Maybe they don't understand it. What exactly is the program? Can you give us a Reader's Digest version?
Sure. We'll go right back to the basics. So back in the early 90s, it was actually the last time we've actually kind of come close to an immigration overhaul. It happened in the late 80s, and then this guest worker program was amended in the early 90s. And so you've probably heard of H2A, H1B, right. H2B. They're all in the same vein, but H2B is specific and unique to our industry. And essentially what it is it's a program that allows for seasonal temporary workers to come over and work for a company that has a temporary or seasonal need for duration, all right? There's a cap to the program. And I know we're going to talk a lot about this cap, but it's the first thing that has to come out. there's a 66,000 statutorily mandated cap. And that is broken into two tranches. So the government works on their count, their fiscal year, which starts October 1st and ends September 30th. So they make 33,000 of these visas available from October 1 to March 31st. And then they make the other 33 available from April 1st to September 30th. Okay. And an employer that wants to access one of those visas, they need to file 90 days out from their date of need. And this is a kind of a crucial component because everybody talks about this, what goes on January 1st, because the vast majority of the landscape industry, not all, trust me, we know your date of need is likely in March, but the vast majority typically file for that April 1st. And so they all file in on January 1st. And there's this period between January 1st and it's usually January 5th, 6th, something around that time. It's a 3 to 5 day period. Everybody files and they're trying to get one of those visas. And they go into a lottery system because of those 33,000, I believe there was petitions for around 130,000 last year. Right. So for 130,000, okay? And you get slotted into a lottery slot, A, B, C, D, E, F, G. And I believe this year there was actually an H, okay?
I didn't know that. Honestly, I didn't even know there was an F, G, and an H. Wow.
Yeah, okay. the first year they did the lottery, there was an F. The next year there was a G, and this year there was an H.
Crazy.
Yeah, and typically there's around 20,000, roughly give or take 20,000-25,000 in each bucket. So if you
so if you're D and under this scenario, you're probably not getting workers.
Right. And I know we're going to get into some of the fixes and the supplemental stuff, but I want to stay with the basics just to make sure everyone's tracking. So the other thing that's important to remember here is you don't just go to the Department of Labor, right? And the funniest thing about this program is it's pure bureaucracies. There's three departments you're going to deal with. You're going to deal with the Department of Labor, the Department of Security, and then the Department of State.
Right.
So you have to actually validate to the Department of Labor that you have this bona fide need and that you have been trying to find a domestic worker and you have not been able to. So there's things about posting the job openings with your state workforce agency. There's active recruiting that needs to be demonstrated. You also need to file with the Department of Labor to get what's called the prevailing wage. And the prevailing wage is tied to your metropolitan statistical area and the actual type of job you're doing. Typically in the landscape industry, the median prevailing wage is around $15 to $16. But I've seen up in Connecticut where it can be as high as $24. And I've seen in Alabama where it can be as low as, say, $12 or $13. So you have to do all of that. And the Department of Labor can say, you've done everything great. You totally deserve a visa.
Right.
But then you get, lottery position F and Department of Homeland Security says, oh, we're not going to issue you a visa. And that's the predicament we're in right now, because this program is perfectly situated to help the landscape industry. It's seasonal. And when you look at the statistics of all of the other industries that use this program, and so you think about this, hospitality, restaurants, golf courses, forestry, seafood pickers, right? The list is long. But we make up about 40% of all H-2B users every year. The next closest is hospitality, and they're only at about 12 to 13%. So we're the largest user by a significant.
Wow. I didn't know that. That's good. Yeah.
So that's kind of the basics of the program. The program is that it's antiquated with a number that Congress just has no motivation to actually move forward.
Right.
I know we can get into some politics here in a moment. I know we will. But I wanted to make sure, Marty, you think I captured the overall basics of the program?
Oh, yeah. Well, and it's just this, like the problem with it has become now is like there's a need for more than 66,000 and we can't get anywhere beyond that. Two quick questions. Can a company that has six employees, do they qualify for the H-2B program?
100%. It is not discriminated based on size. As long as you can validate everything I mentioned before about what you have to go through the Department of Labor, you can have one employee.
So like if you need 12 employees for your small landscaping company, if you have 12 employees, you're probably doing between a million, hopefully closer to 1.5 million. Maybe the last four people are constantly turning, like you would be eligible for this program. And I think you should look into it.
100%.
I know the answer to this question and I will fill in if you don't capture them. But what are the biggest misconceptions that people have about the H-2B program? And I think there's probably the misconception of the landscape company owner. And then there's probably also the misconception of the public.
Yeah. So I think public, and I'm going to go kind of politically here. And
yeah, well, that's okay, because I am too. Yeah. We're on the same page, I bet.
I think we are. So when you look at it from a Democratic standpoint, a lot of times it's the criticism that this feels like an indentured servitude program, which
yes,
it absolutely isn't.
And I hear taking one jobs from American workers.
Yeah. Right. And it, they almost kind of attack it as these folks are getting paid below minimum wage, which is not true almost in every situation.
Exactly.
Right. They're being mistreated by their employers. They're tethered to their employers. They have no freedoms. That's not true at all with regards to the program.
Nope.
I love seeing pictures on social media or getting calls from members that celebrate when their folks come and celebrate when they leave, hoping they get to come back next year. I see generations of folks come, fathers that have come for 20 years, and now their sons are coming. Because when you realize the benefit of how much money they can make in a season here and take back to their country to help their family, their community, it's phenomenal. It's transformational for them. And so,
you know, and here's just a quick thing to add on to that. I do not care what political orientation any of my team members are. The only thing I ask is that they not root for the Pittsburgh Steelers. That's all I ask. Okay. As a Bengals fan, that's a joke.
Agreement with you.
Yeah. I don't know what their political affiliation is. Okay. My entire team from stem to stern, top to bottom, loves the H-2B workers because we can't get workers to fill in the rest of the stuff. And my team ends up getting overwhelmed. They're frustrated. They're overworked. They don't get their production bonuses because we can't hit the revenue levels and the targets that we need. So when you talk about rejoicing, like, this isn't just Marty and Seth, the two highest ranking people at Grunder excited. Like, it's our whole team. Honestly, it is. We love these guys.
No, Marty, and that's a great point. And that segues right over to, so, you know, I talked about kind of the attack that it's abusing the worker, but that other, and you mentioned it about taking U.S. jobs. So let me just roll out some real data and stats for everyone here.
Thank you.
We recently commissioned a study that validated a study from 2012 that each H-2B worker helped support around 4 U.S. jobs. All right. And think about up and downstream. If you have your H-2B workers, you might be able to bring in a new marketing person, a new accountant, a new salesperson.
Right.
But exactly. Also, you're purchasing more equipment. So the equipment manufacturer, it is up, it is vertical and horizontal. And the GAO, which is a nonpartisan congressional kind of research authority, found, because everyone said, oh, it's the H-2B program suppresses wages. It actually found that communities that had more H-2B workers than communities that didn't had higher median wages. So anybody that tells you it's taking U.S. jobs and it hurts the economy, it's a fallacy, because our economy is evolving. And the day you heard me say at the beginning that I worked in the landscape industry in high school and college, that doesn't happen as much anymore. We're having to bring in more workers to do some of this strenuous manual labor. And that's not a negative thing. It's a positive for those workers, and it's a positive for our nation as we continue to evolve. And it supports U.S. workers. It doesn't hinder them.
Right. And it may, I think probably a lot of people already know this, Andrew, but some folks listening may not understand this. So I think our prevailing H-2B wage is $18.75. Mm-hmm. So what that means, and correct me if I'm wrong, but my understanding of what that means is that's our minimum wage here. So we cannot hire anyone, a student. I can't even hire one of my kids to work here for less than $18.75 an hour. So it is a fallacy that it's a capitalistic move that I'm getting these H-2B workers because I don't want to pay Americans what they want to do the job. That's not true. And I got guys making way more than $18.75, but the H-2B workers, that's the mandated wage that I have to pay them. And I don't have anything to do in the survey. Like, they do the survey and tell us what we have to pay. So I think there's just a lot of misconceptions, Andrew, about what the program is and how it is. Let me ask you this. I want people to understand that I don't think the H-2B program is easy. You can't just like go on a website and say, I need 4 people from Zacatecas, Mexico, and I need them April 1. Like, can you briefly explain what companies have to do to participate?
It is. I'm going to give a disclaimer here and a warning. This is not something you should ever do without a professional helping you do it.
Amen. Good point. Like a true attorney. Yes.
Yeah. I've heard too many stories of people trying to do it themselves, spending tremendous amount of time only to get to a place where the Department of Labor gives them a notice.
And one wrong move and you're cooked.
Yeah.
And so hire somebody to help you with it. Yes.
100%. And there's tons of great organizations out there that can help you do it. I will also caution people, this is a very particular program. So you may have an attorney or you may have a local immigration attorney in your town. I can promise you the H-2B process is different than immigration. So I'm not saying the person can't do it, but I strongly encourage folks to go to some of the reputable firms that are, there's several within the industry, and NALP has some strategic providers you can find on our website.
And that's on your website. So we'll make sure we get that in the show notes.
Yeah. But I would just highly recommend you do that. And I also, Marty, this goes out to anybody, member, non-member of NALP. I feel calls regularly just to go over a kind of 101. It usually takes 15, 20 minutes, and I'm happy to talk to anybody that's listening.
Well, and listen, I think that's awesome. And I think people should do that, because I think once they do that, they're going to be like, I got to be a member of NALP. Like, this is stupid.
Yeah. Yeah.
Honestly. I mean,
the one thing about it, Marty, too, and I always tell people there, and I know we're going to get into it here soon, is there's uncertainty with the program. And,
right.
And then that's the biggest.
It's worrisome, right? So, folks, let's hear from one of the trusted partners we work with at Grunder Landscaping Company now.
Are you still doing takeoffs with software from the prehistoric age? Sure, you could reach flow state counting thousands of tiny symbols and measuring endless lines, or you could let Bobyard's AI handle it in minutes and reach flow state at the gym instead. Bobyard automates takeoffs so you can bid faster, win more work, and spend more time developing real business relationships. Hundreds of contractors already use Bobyard to win more bids with less effort. You should too. Go to bobyard.com to book a demo. Make sure you mention Grow Show when you sign up and get 1 month free.
All right, back to the Grow Show. Andrew, let's talk a little bit about why the H-2B program has become so important to landscaping and seasonal businesses. What are you hearing from contractors across the country? Why can't most companies simply have enough seasonal workers locally? Let's get into some of that stuff.
Sure. And I think everyone needs to understand that the H-2B program should never be the silver bullet for your workforce issues.
Good point.
Right? It's part of a mix to help solve what is a crisis throughout many industries, not just the landscape industry in America right now, as our economy and our labor needs are shifting. But it is, if it were to work right, Marty, it's the perfect program for us.
It is.
We continue to hear about, the inability for folks to find workers and, whether it be frontline workers. I do think that there's some great opportunities, through NCLC and making sure you're recruiting with colleges. But I haven't heard the work shortage has only I've been at NALP for 8 years, and I don't think it's gotten any better. Look, I know people that are doing great things to try to hire vets, trying to have folks out of the Bureau of Federal Prisons. There's a ton of things to do, but we know that the entire industry is continuing to struggle. And so we're doing everything we can in the H-2B space, but also the immigration space. Right. Whatever we can do to have legal access to more workers in the industry is a top priority in ALP.
It's a good program. It works.
It does.
Right? When it doesn't work is when, it gets all bogged down right now. Like, our workers were supposed to be here March the 15th and we got them May the 15th.
Mm-hmm.
So consequently, we're behind about $2 million in revenue that we probably will not make up now, Andrew. The sad but true tale. And it doesn't have to be that way. I'm close personal friends with Senator John Husted. I had his staff on a call with you a couple weeks ago. I mean, we're all trying to do what we can do and get people to understand this. And that's part of my reason for wanting to bring you on, to have, there may be some people that are kind of like this in the green industry about the program. Well, I didn't get them 1 year, so I'm not going to do it. And, recently what came out, there's hope that maybe some of that can go away a little bit here. But I think the industry would be in a bad way if this program disappeared.
The industry would be in a very bad place. When you do the math, think about, trying to just crunch numbers in my head real quick, about 50,000 to 60,000 guest workers come in every year in the landscape industry. That's not an insignificant number.
No.
And it certainly isn't for companies that, are bringing in workers to basically represent 30 to 40% of their workforce in a given season. It would be extremely detrimental if it went away.
We kind of touched on this, and I don't know if you have more data to have people understand why H-2B truly isn't replacing American jobs. I mean, you mentioned, I wasn't even thinking about the local power equipment dealer that you work with. You take your company from $1 million to $2.5 million, because now you have a reliable workforce. And by the way, like, and I know you can relate to this, Andrew, imagine what my sales team feels if we're telling people we can't get to you for 90 days because we don't have enough workers versus we can be there in 4 weeks, yeah. You know, because we have enough workers. So can you talk a little bit as to why this, is there more comments we should make on why this isn't replacing American jobs?
Yeah, I mean, like I said, you heard about the stat I said about 4.6 and the GAO report, but fundamentally, I think the anecdotal stories that most companies can tell actually can be more persuasive, especially with elected officials, when you can actually point to, I deal with the restaurant association a lot. They help with it, the hotel industry. Do you know, a lot of times if you go to a beach town this summer and you notice that the restaurants aren't open on Monday and Tuesday, I can tell you right now with pretty certain that it's because they didn't get their H-2B workers. Or when you go to like kind of more of a seasonal inn, I'm not talking about, I know hotels are always trying to not do the laundry every day or whatnot. But if you're in one of those more seasonal areas, so think like Maine or the Upper Peninsula in Michigan, whatever it may be.
Right.
And you've seen restaurants not open during parts of the stay when they're saying we can't clean your room every day, it's because they didn't get their workers. And so how is that helping the domestic workforce in that area?
Right.
Meaning the folks live there all the time. So I just find any person that looks me in the eye and wants to tell me that this is taking a U.S. job, I will gladly say, well, hey, why don't you go out there and get on the lawnmower for the next few hours? Or why don't you do this?
Yeah,
and
exactly.
All of a sudden, when you start trying to make it a little more personal and you actually feel and see it, that's why I use those examples, because I hope a lot of people are having wonderful issues this summer. When you think about what I just said and you see it, you're going to understand they didn't get their H-2B workers.
And you know, I'm going to go back on something I told you. I think it's important that I say this right now. Andrew and I are pretty good friends. We have different political ideology in our foundation, and we get along great. Okay. So this isn't, Andrew is not another person pushing a capitalistic agenda. He's less jaded than I am, folks. He doesn't own a landscaping company. He's an attorney. He's trying to play Switzerland. So that's why I just really appreciate your comments, because I think like you on this. But at times, Andrew, I wonder, is my conservative leaning, like, am I buying too much of this? And I listen to you, and that's what I think, like what you say. Like, I just don't think people understand this. And it's not about people trying to take advantage. I would argue that undocumented workers get taken advantage of because they don't have any place to go. And that's what can happen there. And they wander from job to job, and those get taken advantage of. In my mind, H-2B workers, that can't happen. Like, there's a legal program. You go ahead, you bring your H-2B guys in and you mess with them, you do some funny business, you get audited, you're in a lot of trouble. Every other month, there's some kind of little press release in Landscape Management Magazine about another contractor that tried to pull some shenanigans with somebody and got caught. Like, that's, first of all, that's not me in any way, shape, or form. And it's just unfortunate because, like, for my company, I can't do a local press release and say, hey, the H-2B program that we work with, this is why it's so great. Like, it sounds like whining. Yeah. You just have to be professional and behind the scenes work like what we're doing. But this truly is this is real what we're talking about.
Yeah. And Marty, it's important to remember, thankfully, in the H-2B space, the bad actors are very far and few, and they're completely not supported by NALP or any of our efforts.
Agreed. Well said.
I can tell you, if we're going to get a fix to this program, there probably might be some tighter constraints to make sure there aren't bad actors, because it's not needed. And the people that do that shouldn't be allowed to use the program.
And if you do that, you're banned from the program permanently. You shouldn't get another chance. Like, you don't cheat. You don't do stuff like that. And you're absolutely right. Like, being in good standing there. Let's talk, you know, there's a lot of uncertainty and frustrations that we all have. Like, we're scared about next year. Are we going to go through this again? And we're trying to figure out what's our plan. But when you have H-2B workers, like, some of my guys have been coming here 12 years. They know what they're doing. We don't have to train them. They just pick right up where they left off. It's amazing the injection of enthusiasm and competency that they've given us in the last month. Is the visa cap, the challenge there, the uncertainty going forward, like, what truly is the area there? And if you were going to handicap it for next year, do you think it's getting better, or we got real reason to be concerned again?
So I'm going to backtrack here and do another quick little history lesson with you, Marty. And I know you know this, but this is more for the listeners. So we kind of did the nuts and bolts of the program, but let's kind of tell you where we were and where we're going to make sure everyone understands why we continue to work on this. Because of course, we would love for the program to be on. That's how the H2A program for agricultural uses, we're not considered agriculture, right? So essentially, we had that 66,000 cap, okay? And the program started becoming growing. The economy's growing. Think about the late 90s, early 2000s.
Exactly.
Everything's booming. Everything's great. And there was a senator from Maryland named Barbara Mikulski, and she was in a very powerful position in the Senate. And she loved her crab pickers. Trust me, this will make sense because we're going to get to Andy Harris in a little bit. She loved her crab pickers. Maryland is like a microcosm for H2B with the seafood, the seasonal resort towns, the landscaping, the golf courses.
I didn't think about that. You're right.
Yeah. So it's a great state to have really good congressional support. And so she instituted what was called a returning worker exemption. And it meant if your worker had been here in one of the three previous seasons, they were able to come over and not count against the cap. Okay.
Which makes sense.
It makes sense that it's.
Yes.
The person is not staying here permanently, which some people say, like, it's a returning worker. They're using them for the right way. So that was in place 05, 06, 07, and the cap ballooned all the way up to about 130,000. It was an extra 64,716, which is a number we'll come back to. And then 2008 happens. I think if anybody remembers 2008, there was a presidential election and there was a massive drop in the economy, right? A recession. So the demand for the program went down because it's the demand for the program and the unemployment numbers are inversely related, right? So if unemployment goes up, the demand for the program goes down, we'll hire a domestic worker. It very much makes sense. And so it went away, Barbara Mikulski retires, and then all of a sudden in 2015, the demand started rising again. And so this was a few years before I came to NALP, and we were trying to get the returning worker exception put back in place and make it permanent. And at that time, Speaker Ryan thought, why don't we give the Obama administration the discretionary authority to release up to an additional 64,000 visas. Well, that language has now stuck for the last, that was 2015, so 11 years. And what happens with that language, while it's nice to have some relief, and trust me, we need whatever relief we can get, it leaves this discretionary authority for the current administration to release visas and do so in whichever timely manner. There's no trigger to say they have to do it by this time. They could say we're going to release two visas and we're going to release them on September 1st, which would be pointless, which is why they wouldn't do that. And so over the years, first it was Obama, then it was Trump 1.0, then Biden, we were getting like 15,000 extra visas, but they weren't released until July, June, May, way late in the season. And the turning point occurred during President Biden's second year. He released all 64,716 visas. And he did so in November, which meant folks, especially in the southern part of the states that actually have a data need in February and March, could apply for that first half cap. Remember how I said there's the first half?
Right.
Well, the supplemental visas basically breaks the 64,716 down in a similar fashion. We don't need to get too wonky on this. And it made it so folks could apply for visas that first. It alleviated some pressure on the April 1st filers and then still gave extra visas to the April.
Right.
Post-April 1st. So we are living in this world of trying to have access to the supplemental cap. Does that make sense, Martin? I wanted to make sure I set the
table.
Do you think I said it right and I can project?
Yes, 100%.
Good. So the Trump administration is in this interesting situation. Politically, he's got Stephen Miller and kind of the hard right hawkish immigration hawks. I have used hawks twice there. I apologize.
Right.
That are very against guest workers for some of those same reasons we've already dispelled, like they're taking U.S. jobs, they're staying here illegally. But that's kind of where they're principled at, right? We're trying to change their minds. If you don't think we try to talk to them, we do. We've had some very engaging conversations and we've made some progress. So he has that side to worry about. And that's a significant chunk of the MAGA base, in my opinion. But then President Trump, Mar-a-Lago is the ninth largest user of the H-2B program in the state of Florida. Okay,
he uses it
in all of his golf courses and properties. So the president himself principally understands the program, thinks the program's great. He's used it for many, many years, and so there's this internal tug within the administration, and that's why this year we were very concerned on December 31st when they announced they were only going to release half of those 64,000 extra visas. Myself and several other folks actually were able to go to Mar-a-Lago And have some conversations with some folks very high up within the Trump administration. And by the end of January, we were able to get all 64,000. So it was not
a problem. When I say, that's why I like giving you a hug, because thank you.
No,
I mean,
there's a lot of involved, but thank you, Marty. It was
you know, just a side note that's like an applicable lesson universally here. People, you know, you and I are on a special program here. It's kind of like Teams for podcasting, but you go and you sit next to someone and you talk to them in person.
Yep.
And the effectiveness of those type of conversations versus screaming and yelling, posting on social media, or even doing conference video casting like this, I applaud you for going down there and talking with those folks in person. That probably helped a lot.
It certainly did. And you know, a lot of credit to a lot of other people. We work really close with the Seasonal Employment Alliance, and they were integral in that as well.
Shout out to Gray. Thank you.
Gray and me are thick as thieves, my friend.
Gray's a rock star too. Yes,
he is. He is. But you know, where we go into next year, you know, I would tell you that I think we will likely, if we're in the same paradigm of having the discretionary authority and not anything better, which at this point in time seems really likely for some other political reasons. I do think we made significant progress getting those extra visas out, to make it so anybody that would want to try to hold them back would think twice about having to answer to their boss a second time to say, why didn't you release all the visas? But hey guys, this is a tumultuous and an interesting administration, an interesting time. So there is by no way can I guarantee that we're going to get those 64,000 seats in 16. Right. I can guarantee we're going to try our hardest to make sure we do that and we get that announcement as early as possible.
Well, and every year I think it's getting a little bit better in terms of the understanding of it. And that's, you know, when you have a problem with something, half of it is having the person that's resisting you actually truly understand the problem, which I think you've done a great job of. We used to get a lot of rhetoric about our H-2B workers. Well, you sent someone over here that didn't speak English. So on. We had a review posted on Google last night by a customer that didn't mention anything about the language barrier. Now, our guys do pretty well between their cell phones and the English classes they're taking, they're trying. And the person must have went out and got the spelling of every single person's name because a couple of them were tongue twisters. And she posted a review saying, so grateful to have Grunder in my lawn yesterday. The crew, she listed their names, did a super job. Awesome. And anybody reading a review is going to know, well, those aren't American names. Like, and that's like, it's embraced by people now. Like, I just feel like we've come a long way with that. You know, look, I can either have someone come over in your yard that probably understands more English than you think. They do a really good job and they work their tail off, or I can not do your job because we're not finding people. We're trying everything, Andrew. We are not giving up on the American. We are constantly recruiting, but it's difficult. I mean, we offer a $2,000 bonus if you last 90 days, and we only pay that bonus out 19% of the time. Oh. People can't even make it to 90 days. Some of these excuses, like at one point I said to Rachel, our talent and brand manager, I said, does so-and-so have 17 grandmothers? Like, how many of them have passed away? Yes. Like, it's just the stuff that goes on and the obstacles to, in my mind, trying to get ahead in life. And then you see the H-2B workers that might make $1,000, $1,200, $1,300 a week, whatever it is, and they're sending most of that back to their family. Like, I just don't see how you can't have a soft spot in your heart for somebody working hard trying to get ahead.
Yeah, I mean, and Marty, not to, you know, divert us completely, but I mean, think about some of the fear and trepidation some of these workers have had to encounter over the last 12 months. Just having a different color skin and being in the street and seeing law enforcement around them. And so my heart totally goes out to these workers. Then, Marty, you say, right, they're part of your organization's family. And so whenever I hear about any abuse stories, it hits a nerve with me, Marty.
We are fortunate. Here in Dayton, Ohio and Cincinnati, we've not had one issue. There's been no... I read stuff in bigger cities. I wonder at times if it's being sensationalized a little bit because we don't see any of that, none of it. And every single one of my guys is legal, so there's nothing to worry about. But, you know, some of those things are unfortunate. Are there any other changes? We've done a great job discussing this. You have such a vast knowledge and understanding of this issue. Are there any changes that NALP is still advocating for? You touched on them a little bit, but speak to that. And well, are you optimistic about the future of the H-2B program?
Yeah. So here's, you know, this is pretty funny. It's not funny. It's embarrassing. We have not funded the Department of Homeland Security since 2023. We've been living on what's called a continuing resolution. So it just
didn't
means they carry everything forward. And
okay, I didn't know that. Interesting.
Because we a lot of the other agencies get funded, right? And it doesn't, Department of Homeland Security is still funded just at the same level from 2020.
Yeah.
Now there's the whole thing with reconciliation and Customs and Border Protection, CBP and ICE being funded through reconciliation. That's something kind of separate. But the Department of Homeland Security bill is so contentious. Think about building the wall, immigration, all of that stuff is in there. And H-2B is just a tiny fraction of it, but it's the reality of where we have to live. And we live in this appropriations world because Congress doesn't really pass anything independently.
Right.
And so what I'm optimistic about is we're trying to get what's called a certified seasonal employer approved. And you heard me talk about the returning worker earlier, and the returning worker was focused more on the worker. The certified seasonal employer is focused more on the employer to try to negate anything that the employer is acting bad. And what we're trying to do is saying, if you're a worker, I mean, employer, that's used the program for at least 5 years, five consecutive years, with no infractions, that you can get the highest number of any one of those 5 years. So if you got 10, 10, 15, 10, 10, you'd be able to bring 15 over that don't count against that 66,000 cap. Okay. And you would know that you're getting them, right? And so we got that.
Which would be a huge boon. That would be great.
And it doesn't mean, if you were that worker that got your 15, but you really needed 17, you could apply for those two extra and go through the lottery and you might get lucky and you might be able to beat them, right?
Right.
And so we think it's a pragmatic solution to reward good actors, to reward good employers, and bring over good workers. And we had a huge win last week because we got this language into the House Appropriations, FY27. Fantastic. So much effort. Yes, everyone to the fly-in. I know.
If you didn't live so far away, I would have come over and had a beer with you.
We will do that soon, Marty.
Yes, I'm fine.
I thank you. So we got that in. And as I tell everybody, look, just because we got it in the House bill doesn't mean it's done. It's like, I love sports analogies. Everyone's heard me say this. I apologize. I'm a broken record. We basically just got through the first quarter and we're up 14-0. And I'd rather be up 14-0 than down.
Great way to say it. Yeah.
Right. And so we've got some work ahead of us. And we also have just the dynamics that we have a midterm election, right? And so there's going to be very little motivation for Congress to do anything until. And so when you're projecting what's going to happen in 2027, we might get the certified seasonal employer, but we won't even know about it until at its earliest, probably around December 1st. It could leak all the way to December 31st. So I'm telling everybody to plan like we have that discretionary language we've had for these many years, and plan for us pressuring the heck out of the Trump administration to get those visas released in that November, December timeframe. If we get those visas released and then we do get CSC, it's like the icing on top of the cake, right?
Yes.
But I'm telling everyone, we're in a unique situation with a possible flip in control of certain chambers of Congress, where there's going to be a lame duck. We're already in the base text of a bill. So we're kind of in one of the better positions we've been in several years to maybe get something significant. But I just caution everybody about the likelihood of it happening and the timing, and that everybody should plan more like what we've experienced the last few years.
That makes sense. So we can put this in the show notes, but reiterate what everyone can do here with their local congressmen, their senators, any representative that can apply pressure here, I think is good. What specifically should they do? Is there a letter they should send? Do we want to put a link in the show notes of showing that? Can we put something together? Because I think we've got a lot of active people here.
Yep.
We're the downloads a month on the Grow Show is growing, pardon the pun. What can we do to help?
So a couple of things. First of all, and Marty, make sure to get my contact information.
Yes.
Anything that's not getting or is not on my distribution list for H-2B information, or that does not receive the advocate on Friday afternoons, really needs that, because that's where the information's coming. Marty, you know, you get my emails. It can be late at night sometimes when something's happening.
Yes.
But we also do send a regularly weekly email on Fridays.
Yes.
And there's always alerts in that. So that's step one. Step two is, if you see one of those and you read it, step one is always get informed. Right? Get educated. Step two is take action. right? And so that's if you see a link from me or Marty, or it's posted on social media by one of your colleagues or friends, this isn't like a phishing scam. We're not taking your information to spam you or anything like that.
Right.
We're literally sending you a form that all you have to do is put in your name and address. And we've already pre-drafted the letter. You have to just press
click. It takes under 60 seconds. It's crazy.
Yeah. And I have my kids.
You enter your zip code where you're at. It automatically selects the constituents to reach out to and or the lawmakers to reach out to. And it does it like that.
Yeah. But here's the other thing. And I'm not saying you have to do this, but what I've told some folks recently, if you have longstanding relationships with some of your customers, if it's just a homeowner, but what if it's a business? What if it's a prominent business within your area?
Yeah.
And you don't get your workers and they're upset with you, they're frustrated with you, maybe they're a good partner and they're just trying to work with you. Make sure they understand what's going on with this program, because we need to continue to change the discourse and recruit non-traditional allies. I'm not asking that person to go email their congressman, but it makes a difference when more people are aware of what's going on. And we try to continue to turn this tide of, this is a great guest worker program. This is not an immigration program. This is not taking U.S. jobs. And it's critical to the landscape and other seasonal industries.
And that's, I'm very pleased with our discussion today. And I, again, what I really like is you and I have probably vote for a different candidate in some cases, although maybe not, we'll see.
We'll see.
This is a universal issue. This really is not political. This is a need of business owners, and we can't just sit back and keep taking it. And I don't mean that like go cause violence. That's not what I mean. Like create awareness in your community, reach out to your congressmen, your senators, all those folks, and let them know that this is important to you and you need to pay attention to this.
Yep. Totally. Right, I
want to give you a magical question. If Congress handed you a blank sheet of paper and they said, Andrew, design the workforce program American needs, what would you say? Is it this H-2B program with the returning worker exemptions? What is it?
So if I was allowed to design the program, I would mirror some similarities to the H-2A program.
Okay.
And I would basically say, if you have done everything that the Department of Labor says you need to do, so keep those guardrails in, so you have to be able to validate that you can't find a U.S. worker, right? Then you get your work permit. And don't make it tethered to an April 1st and an October 1st.
Right.
If you can't find a worker and you need your worker on January 28th, you can bring your worker over on January 28th. And
how do you plan for that? You know, the companies have gotten keen private equities involved, which is not a bad thing, folks. It's a great thing. It's shined a light on an industry they had no interest in it 15 years ago. And now look at it.
Yeah.
But if you're building up your reoccurring revenue on maintenance, how, you know, you have that work to renew and then you don't have the workers. Like this just seems so silly and pathetic that we have a good thing going. There's a program that solves it. There's plenty of workers from Mexico, the triangle, all those areas that want to come to our great country and work. And it's become we become pawns in a political argument, which is silly, really. It's not what's best for Americans. It's not what's best for our economy.
No, you're exactly right, Marty. And it's unfortunate. The politics behind this are entrenched in kind of the far sides of both political parties. And what I will tell you, and I do think, but I would hope people take this away, as frustrated as you guys are with Congress, I am more frustrated because I deal with it on a more regular basis. But there's actually a lot of good folks up there in the middle, or more moderate. I mean, they're Republicans or Democrats, but they're more moderate folks.
Yeah.
We have more of them than the people that oppose it, which is just unfortunate.
Yeah. Right.
The ones on the far sides, though, have the louder megaphones. And that's kind of the dysfunction that it is kind of crippling DC right now. But there are some really good folks out there that are working for us. And I'm really happy. The fact you mentioned Senator Houston, he's fantastic. Marty, I followed up with his office yesterday to close the loop on something.
Yeah.
And they're being really helpful on this issue.
Well, I told you he would listen. I mean, I think you were impressed. I got three of his staffers to join us on a call. I mean, now granted, Senator Houston and I are pretty close. We went to college together and we've been friends for 30 some years. So I expect my friend to help me a little bit, but again, there's only so much he can do.
Exactly. He can't do it alone.
Yeah. I mean, but this is what can happen. Like, you might be surprised. You may think you're only running a $2 million business. Your senator will listen to you. You can get through to them and you can talk to them. And if they hear this enough, they can start paying attention to it more.
Yep.
All right. Well, we're going to wrap this up. We've had Andrew Bray on with us from the National Association of Landscape Professionals. We've been having a wonderful discussion on the H2B program. Andrew, I think this has been so good. I'm going to send this out to senators and have them watch it, because I think we touched on what truly is at heart here of the issue and some of the trials and tribulations that we go through. Is there anything we haven't talked about as we wrap this up that landscaping companies should be doing right now to prepare for the future, regardless of what happens with the H2B program? Do you have any wisdom to add with that question?
I think I'll circle back, not to beat a dead drum, but the H2B program can only be a component of your workforce issue.
And I agree with that.
Right. If you ever get to a place where you're in excess of 40% of your workforce is relying on H2B, you've hit the critical danger zone.
Yeah.
Okay? So that means you need to be doing some more work within your community to find workers, whether that's working with veterans group, whether that's working with community colleges, whether that's working with prisons, you heard me say. There's a lot of things, and NALP has some great resources for that. But I think you need to plan for a continued tumultuous labor market for the next several years, unfortunately. I do think there is a possibility of some immigration and H2B significant reform in the next Congress. Because here's the one thing I'll tell you. President Trump is extremely transactional and would love to solve immigration. And he would have the appetite from a legacy perspective to do something in the remaining 2 years of his term. And I think he's willing to play ball with the Democrats.
I never thought about that. He certainly is a guy of ego that likes to put points up on the board. That is a great point, Andrew.
Yeah. So just so you guys know, as much as you hear me talk H2B, know that we have our pulse on everything in the immigration space as well, because that's equally as important. If all of a sudden, you know, 10 million workers that are here, I don't know what the number is, I'm probably wrong with that number, could also be completely eligible and legal to work. That would also be extremely beneficial to the landscape industry.
So we're going to wrap this up just so we get the highlights, rapid fire. Andrew, biggest misconception about H2B, what's a short answer there?
Takes U.S. jobs.
Okay. Biggest opportunity for our industry.
Certified seasonal employer in FY27. We're going to get it passed.
Fantastic. One thing every landscape owner should understand about workforce planning.
That it's multifaceted.
Agreed. Good point. And then finally, what's the one thing listeners and viewers today can do to help support the industry's advocacy efforts?
Get informed and get connected with NALP.
Yeah. Join NALP, folks. It's worth its weight in gold. The Grow Group is never going to be in the lobbying and advocating business. It's not what we do. That's why we have Andrew. I can't touch what he's doing. I can support what he's doing. I can use my megaphone to draw more attraction to what he's doing. I hope you'll join NALP. Andrew, thanks for joining us today.
Marty, I truly appreciate it. And if you're not a part of NALP, we welcome you with open arms. But I hope if you're listening to Grow, that you plan to go to Grow every year, because I go every year and it's one of my favorite events.
Well, and we love having you there. You're awesome. I love your energy, Andrew, and I consider you a good friend, and I cherish the fact that I know you and I can get a hold of you when I have an issue. It's been super. I think we've done some good things. I do have some political contacts, and you've been able to, you know, people, I'll share a little personal information. In 2008, President George Bush came to my house. So I have some political capital. But I don't really know what to do with it. And I'm not really a political operative. Okay. Andrew many times has probably thought, man, Marty really doesn't know what he's doing. No, I don't. Because I have Andrew and I just go ask him to help me. And you can do the same, folks. He told you whether you're a member or not, you can call Andrew. So
always.
Well, thank you. I hope everyone listening leaves with a better understanding of what the H2B program is, why it's important, and where things may be headed in the future. If people want to learn more about H2B or NALP, go to their website. We've got it. I think National Association of Landscape Professionals.org. Is that it?
Yeah.
And we'll have that link in the show notes. Andrew, thanks again. It's been awesome.
Marty, it was truly a pleasure. Wonderful conversation with you this morning.
Well, folks, that's going to do it for this week's edition of The Grow Show. If you haven't done so already, subscribe to The Grow Show. And if you can, give it a rating or share a comment. That helps more success-minded landscape professionals find us. And if you really want to help us, take out your phone or share this episode with someone on your team or a landscape pro you know, or even your local congressman or your senator, state senator. Let them know that this is an issue and tell them to watch this. It'll give them the ups and the downs of what we've been through, folks. Thanks for joining us on The Grow Show this week. We'll talk to you next week.
Join Marty and the Grow Group team at Grunder Landscaping Company this year. We host GLC field trip events at our living laboratory, Grunder Landscaping Company. where we show you how we operate and how you can too. This event features small groups, you get the one-on-one attention you need, and features a full 27 hours on-site at GLC, where we dive deep into everything from operations to sales to administration. Find more information and sign up at growgroupinc.com, and do it quickly, these events sell out every year.